So if you're visiting with us today, how incredibly discouraging to hear all that and then to get me up here. What a bummer. What a bummer. I didn't see that video until a couple of days ago. And was anybody else a little mad that they weren't asked to be a part of a video? How many people in this room have been loved well by Brian Mashburn? I've never known anyone like him. He is a weirdo. And I'm sort of kidding, and I'm not. He is a freak of nature to me. I've never known anyone as passionate. I've never known anyone as forgiving and as patient and as accepting and as all in as Brian. You may not know this. Some of you do. I struggled with Brian for more than a few years because when Brian got here, I didn't know where I fit anymore. And my own arrogance and my own pride, and I struggled with what to do with what's my voice now. How do I compare and where will I go and what will I say? And he never stopped loving me. Relentlessly, annoyingly. He believed in me, and he believes in you, and he believes in Christ. Thank you. Thank you. So it's kind of interesting that the guy that I want to talk about for the next 2 weeks kind of reminds me of Brian. We call him John the Baptist. Now, nothing about the camel hair and, you know, those kinds of things. But I want you to think about what we know about John the Baptist. He is passionate. He is in the spirit of Elijah. Elijah-esque. Think Mount Carmel, right? He's all in. You may not know this about Brian. You do know it about John the Baptist. He had a limited diet, right? If you've ever been to eat with Brian, you've been to the same two restaurants over and over and over again. Very limited diet. And I actually found a picture this week that I thought, they even kind of look alike. I just realized that. Turn to John chapter 3. I want to begin a series, a two-week series. It's not 49 weeks or whatever it was, Brian, but a two-week series that's very straightforward, very upfront, that says something very simple. I believe that many of our heartaches and many of our struggles and much of our pain is due to the simple fact that we have not put God in his place as greater than. We've put a lot of other things in that place. And the reality is God has a place and a space in this world and in our hearts and in our culture that it was made to be. And he is greater than. And I want to use John the Baptist for the next 2 weeks to see how he did it well. But those of you that know him and know his story know that it didn't always go well for John. And this week, I want to focus in John chapter 3. So what do we know about this guy? We know about the camel hair, and we know about the honey and the locusts and all those kinds of things. We know that he came in the spirit of Elijah. This guy was expectant. Something was going to happen with him. He was screaming out in the desert, calling out in the desert, inviting his people to repent. We know that story. He was a witness and a forerunner. And large crowds began to come out into the desert and go, what's this about? This isn't some Jewish synagogue service. It was, what's he saying? And why is everybody running out there to see what's going on? I do this a lot. But I'm sitting there looking at his life, this life of witness, this life of passion, this life of all in, and wondering, is this the faith that we experience today? And I'll look at this group right here who sits here week after week after week staring at their phones. Don't act like some of you don't do the same thing. I'm not picking on them. I'm wondering how you experience faith. Is it with passion and with you get to be a part to play in the story of God that somewhere, some moment, sometime, you're going to be a witness and you're preparing all your life for it? Is that how you experience faith, or is it comfort and ease? I wonder how those of us that have sat in these rooms for 20 and 30 and 40 and 50 and 60 years, is this how we experience faith? Or are we retired and comfortable? What about those that have joined us in the last few weeks and years as new believers? How do you experience faith? Is it in a pew wondering when I'm going to be done? Or is there a thought of, I cannot wait to see what he's going to do? I keep asking myself, what makes him different? What makes the Apostle Paul different? What makes Brian different? What made Mary Neidhart different in the way there was this expectation all the time of, I'm going to change the world? Those of you that know me know that I like to ask questions and never give any answers. It's really fun. And it really irritates people, and that's enjoyable to me. But I'm looking at these men and these women of faith and of passion and of joy and of the fruits of the Spirit and going, what is it? And I want to offer an answer. It's not the answer, it's an answer. And I want to do it through this man named John the Baptist. In John chapter 1, we know that text, right? In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. We know verse 14 that he came and dwelt among us. But you may not know a lot of chapter 1 is about John. What do we know about this guy? And I want you to compare it as you guys sit here the way you sit every week. As you sit in the same spot that you sit in every... I want you to compare what the text says about John and compare it to you. What do we know? He was sent from God. Sounds like stuff Paul says to us. Chosen, predestined, we're a part of the story. He came to testify and witness for Jesus. Sounds like the Great Commission. You want to go into all the world and you want to make a difference. You want to make disciples. You want to be a part. He was a voice preparing the path for Jesus. He did not see himself as an equal to Jesus. Remember, there he is. I'm not even worthy to untie his sandal. He saw the difference, the huge difference. He points out Jesus as the Messiah. His whole life was pointing. He never claimed it for his own. He just kept saying, it's about him. It's about him. It's about him. He testified that Jesus was the Son of God. You get the picture early in his ministry as people flocked out that he was the man. Everybody wanted to see him. Everybody wanted to know, what's he doing out there? And then we get to John chapter 3, which is our text for this morning. And we get to see the heart of God through John. Let's just read together. Verse 22. After this, Jesus and his disciples went out into the Judean countryside, where he spent some time with them, and he baptized. Now John also was baptized in the Anon near Salim, because there was plenty of water, and people were constantly coming to be baptized. This was before John was put in prison. an argument developed between some of John's disciples and a certain Jew over the matter of ceremonial washing. They came to John and said to him, "Rabbi, that man who was with you on the other side of the Jordan, the one you have testified about, well, he's baptizing and everyone is going to him." We just read through this, but there was a problem, and it was about ceremonial washings, and his guys walked over to talk to him about it, and they didn't talk about that at all. They said, "What about us? Hey, there's an issue with ceremonial washing, or there's an issue how we view the Bible, or there's a, and we want to talk, and let's, hey, what about me? Where do I fit? Where do I belong?" And to this, John replied, "A man can receive only what is given him from heaven. You yourselves can testify that I have said, I am not the Christ, but I am sent ahead of him. The bride belongs to the bridegroom. The friend who attends the bridegroom waits and listens for him and is full of joy when he hears the bridegroom's voice. That joy is mine, and it is now complete. He must become greater, and I must become less." You see what's happening? John knows that he's not the point, but his followers do not. And as we sit here this morning, I just wonder, do we know we're not the point of the story? Do we know that our hurt and our struggle and our fear and our is not the point of the story? And we all shake our head and nod yes, but then what? John just simply points to Jesus. He must increase. And part of me wants to read the second half, that we must decrease. But so many people go, yes, I really resonate with, I must decrease. And that's not the point. The point is, he must increase. The story is about Jesus. Not you, Kyle. What's the point, John? What's your point? He is. I want you to think about how his followers must have been wrestling with that as they watched them slowly fade, as people slowly walked away and wondering, do we matter? Do we have a part to play? I just want us to feel the struggle. And it starts when we're little bitty kids. Do we matter? Do I have a part in the story? Can I be a part? And it starts when big brother knocks the hooey out of little brother and tells him who's in charge. Because he has a part to play. He's valuable. He matters. I'm a little brother and I'm still not over it, just in case you're wondering. And then it goes to the playground. Am I valuable? Do I matter? Do I have a group of people that I can be a part of? Am I okay? And John's followers are going, they're all going over there. It's in the classroom. It's in our friendships. Am I okay with you, Ed? Are we good? Are we okay? Do I matter? Am I okay? And you're like, Kyle, that's silly. I know I'm not talking about the gospel right now. I'm talking about my humanity. Do I matter? Am I okay? And we go searching for it everywhere we go. Can I be valuable? And we do it to our spouses. And we do it to our kids. If my kid strikes out or my kid's not treated a certain way, we run and we do what? We are value seekers as human beings. And John just keeps going like this. It's his story. I am looking for a place to belong. We all are, but many are not finding it. Many in our city are not finding it. And many can't find it, but do we know why? It's because we've tried to make ourselves the point. We've tried to make what we look like, what we sound like, how we're viewed, the major point. And so instead of pointing to the cross, instead of saying, this is what defines me, I am loved and I am saved and forgiven, and what you say does not get to define me. Instead of that, I point. Look at how good I am. Look at what I've done. Look at my kids. And my point, instead of pointing to the cross, begins to point back at me. And I point at my goodness and my rightness and how educated or how this. And if that doesn't work, I start pointing at you. Well, look what they've done. Look at their life. I'm better than that. And it doesn't work. And we have group after group after group that I get to sit with and listen to of people going, do I matter? It's not how they say it, but they're fighting. Do I matter? And John keeps pointing. He just keeps pointing. And Brian just keeps pointing. And Brian just keeps pointing and saying, this is who you are. Look at verse 29. The bride belongs to the bridegroom. The friend who attends the bridegroom waits and listens for him and is full of joy when he hears the bridegroom's voice. That joy is mine, and it is now complete. The Old Testament imagery, you hear it, right? That Israel is the bride and God is the bridegroom. It transfers into the New Testament, where the church is the bride and Jesus is the bridegroom. But John describes himself as a friend of the two. Do you know what the friend's job was? He was the liaison. He was the one that sent the invitations out. He was the master of ceremonies. He's the one that was so excited for the bride and for the groom. I'm going to step on a few toes real quick. I'm sorry. I'm not. Have you ever been to a wedding? And generally it doesn't happen at the wedding. It either happens at the rehearsal or the rehearsal dinner or at the reception, where somebody in the room makes the wedding about them other than the bride and groom. And you're like, seriously, this is about them. Can you please be quiet? And it's so embarrassing. And I know people who have fretted for weeks and weeks and weeks because of some family member who's going to do this. And the picture we have here is a friend looking at the bride and the bridegroom and going, this is what it's all about. I'm going to spend my life pointing here, not pointing here or pointing there. John says he must become greater. But why? Because he is. Brent Adams told me just a few weeks ago, he said, I'll never stand up again and not preach the gospel. I won't ever give bad news again. And I'm sitting there going, he is greater. He's greater than my sin. And he's greater than all the stories that I've been here so long. You know how dumb I am. You know how broken I am. He is greater than what you think of me. He is greater than my inadequacies. He's greater than your inadequacies. He's greater than my fear. He's greater than my faults. And so we point at Jesus. I want to give you three things. I've been accused of just saying things and not giving like lists. People like lists. So I've never had a list. I have three things that I'm going to fly through. Three things. How do you do this? because we live in a culture that we think we have to grab value for ourselves. What's my next step? Sorry, Lashana, is that okay? My bad. How do we do it? How do we transform? How do we stop seeking value from every person we come to and start pointing our hearts and our minds and our lives towards the cross? How do we do it? Number one, we have to acknowledge where our life is pointing now. We have to just be honest. A couple of months ago, a friend of mine, Elise Harrison, gave me a podcast. Tim Keller, he's preaching in Matthew chapter 6. And the words of Jesus' prayer are this: "Hallowed be thy name." And he spent the entire sermon talking about that one word. He goes, that word is never used, but it's kept in the NIV because there's not an English word like it. It means something to the effect of to treat something as ultimate, to put something in your heart as the ultimate aim of your life, to make something your ultimate concern. And Jesus says how to pray is, hallowed be thy name. Hallowed be his name. And he goes, a lot of people don't know what they treat as sacred. And he gave an exercise that I've done probably 20 times. Here's the exercise. If you don't know what is ultimate in your life, if you want to say it's God, but you're not sure, here's what he said. He said, what do you think about when you have nothing else to think about? When you have time to just ponder and you go, I don't have that time. Dude, I got four kids. You got that time, all right? What do you think about when you're lying in bed? It's time to go to bed. What comes to your heart? What do you daydream about? Is it being great? Is it your successes of the day, your business successes or your relationship successes? Is it winning? Is it sexuality? Is it how people in this room view you or how people outside this room view you? Is it achievement? Is it comfort? Is it your kids? Well, we've got to make sure that they do this. Whatever you daydream about, according to Tim Keller, you can agree or disagree, whatever you daydream about is what you hallowed. So how do we move forward? We just have to be honest. You guys know me. I would like to say, my prayer every day is, God, that I would want you more than I want anything else in this world. And there are days that I pray it and I go, but right now I don't. But I want to. Do you even know what you hallowed? What you desire? Number two, remember your significance. You know that picture in The Lion King, remember? The son has forgotten who he was, and he's lived an entire life basically running away. And the crazy monkey comes and gets him. And he takes him down. He says, I've seen your father. Let me show him to you. And he looks in the pool of water and he sees his own reflection and his disappointment falls. His face just, that's just me. Do you remember what the monkey told him? Look harder. We have forgotten who we are. We are sons and daughters. We are loved and we are saved and we are forgiven. In Route 56 right now, we've just finished this series. It's called The Red Words. The Red Words of Jesus. You know, some of the Bibles have red words in them as Jesus is direct speaking. And here's what we've done. Read the red words, believe the red words, and do the red words. And you know what the biggest problem is? It's not believing the red words or even doing the red words, is we're not reading them. We live in a culture where the text has become something that we put off to the side and we try to feel spiritual. Remember who you are. Yes, I can get that when Brian tells me and reminds me who I am. But the Father tells you over and over and over and over that you have a part to play. John's role was significant. It just wasn't supreme. Remember your significance. Lastly, accept your role. Verse 27, to this John replied, a man can receive only what is given him from heaven. But I wish I was more like Brian. I wish I was more like Brent. I wish I was more like... We're not. I have a role to play, and you have a role to play. My struggle with Brian that I alluded to earlier was about me wanting his role. I could tell you, I don't want your role ever again. I'm good. But that's what it was about. This morning, the question is simple. What's your point? What's your point? Do you point to you going, I'm good. I can do this. My grades are this. I am significant. Do you point at others going, I wish I was like them, or I'm glad I'm not like them? Or do we sit in a reality? He is greater than. I didn't know which story to tell to end this, and so I wrote about 10 on here because there are lots in this room. And I chose Vernon Robinette because even yesterday, in that hospital room, knowing the future, whether it's days or weeks or months, no one knows. But Betty, he encapsulates this in my heart. That at every turn, Vernon points to Jesus. At every turn, he points the people around him. He's calling me from the hospice VA, basically, going, Kyle, I've got this lady. I need you to talk to her. And I've had a Bible study. Every person that comes in contact with him, he goes, look at him. Elders, ministers, would you guys take your spots? In your life groups tonight, if you meet, I would encourage you to sit around a table and tell stories of the Vernons in your life. And that's how I want to say it. I could have said the Bryans, and I could have said the Jerrys, and I could have said the... Tell stories of the Vernons and the John the Baptists. And of your mom and your dad. The war we are in matters. Sitting here, pointing at each other and pointing at ourselves equals a dying church. We must come back to pointing at the Son of God. We don't know how to do it perfectly. Some days I don't know how to do it at all. But we want to do it with each other. We want to do it with each other. What do you need? Stop waiting. Stop wondering, well, if they knew this about me. We want to point you to Christ, not to a right way of behavior. If you need anything, if we can walk with you in any way, would you come meet one of these guys, one of these girls? Come as we stand and as we sing.